grateful. I've been very lucky in this project, the 40 and 30 project, been very lucky to sort of be able to get people lined up with players that I think spiritually and in people's minds make a lot of sense. We had Johnny talking about David Schneider. The beginning of Johnny Sources, of course, was the David Schneider call up. We've got
Johnny who? Sorry, Johnny who?
Johnny Junta from Gate 14 was.
Haven't heard of him.
Well, if you're into the mainstream media, you might not have heard about it. But and we had Drew Favre Service talking about Alejandro Kirk, somebody that he sort of wrote about back when the old fingers still worked. And BK is talking about George Springer. Famously, BK sort of became part of people's common knowledge, the haircut heard around the world, very tied to that guy. And when today's guest, it's the Babe Ruth called shot. It's the, you knew how the offseason was going to play. I get that at like, they're going to sign Tanner Roark. I don't get the deep dive information. Anyway, today's guest is talking about Dalton Varsho. And I think when you talk about Dalton Varsho, and if you were there online grinding, trying to talk baseball in December of 2022, you remember my guest today's wonderful thread about why Dalton Varsho was a likely trade target. As always, the information was brought out in a probably double digit tweet thread with a really nice job of weaving through storytelling. Could tell the guy's a broadcast professional. It's an honor today to be joined on 40 and 30 to talk about Dalton Varsho by Chris Black. And you know him, Down to Black on Twitter. Chris, thank you so much for joining.
Anytime for you, my man. That's spaces got many people through the 2024 offseason. So anytime I can help out.
That's greatly appreciated. Before we even get into it, I think people, now that we're into the roster, now that we're into not reading about guys I've never seen before and guessing, I think people sort of are able to have a little bit more of a formed opinion of how they think of some of these players. Before we even get into the numbers and who and the performance and the expectations, what is it about Dalton Varsho and you? What was the thing that you, we all have our guys, we all have people, we all have reasons. What is it with Dalton Varsho and you?
I'm an outfield defense nerd. I played baseball for 20 years. Most of those two decades were spent in center field and left field. Had a big Devon White idolization going on when I was 10, 11. I even liked, I was a big Jose Cruz Jr. guy. Nice. When he was on the Jays. I liked Vernon Wells more than most people did. I thought he was kind of scapegoated a little bit.
Absolutely.
In our town. I like center fielders. And I like I thought the value, like Kevin Pillar got like an unfair label as like a casual fan's favorite. Like,
yeah.
And TV people diver. it was before we were kind of deep into like the value of really good defense and how that equates to guys who are hit first. So like, I think he was unappreciated by people, especially like people who gave him those unfair TV dive labels for some of his catches. So anyways, I'm an outfield defense nerd. And that thread, which actually the trade was December. The thread happened. I still remember this because I was dropped off my car to get work done. And I was sitting in a coffee shop in 2 days after the 2022 season ended. And it was still fresh in our minds. And I dove into outfield defense. And Varsho, I didn't know Varsho that well. The Jays hadn't played Arizona for a few years. I don't remember exactly when, but I know they didn't play him in 22, and I don't think they played him in 21 either. And they definitely wouldn't have played him in 20, because of the COVID stuff. So I didn't know much about him. And it was literally sitting, going through numbers in this coffee shop and then click it. I'm like, who is this guy? I knew the name a little bit, but it was when I saw the clip, the defensive numbers jumped off the page. Then I looked at a bunch of clips and I was just this guy is my kind of guy. this is the exact kind of guy I'd love to watch play defense. And so I made a list. Like, it's funny, that list now is kind of even funnier because it was Bellinger was on that list of like guys that I thought they should target potentially. Again, this is 2 years ago. Kevin Kiermaier was number two on that list, who I thought they should go after as a free agent, which they did. And one was Varsho. And I still, like I said at the time, like, I don't know what it would take to get him. I don't know if they're even interested, but like, this would be the guy I would try to get. But again, in theory for me, it was to play center field for the next 5 or 6 years. And they went deep on, like, I was convinced outfield defense was a problem in 22. It was worrying me more as that season went along. As everyone knows, with the Lourdes, his adventurous roots, Teoscar's bouts of absent-mindedness. I don't know how else to put that.
It's a long game if you're just standing out there.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. And he could be good at sometimes too, but let's not get off track. So I was, and George Springer could get to ball. He caught everything he got to, but was getting to less. And one of the things I looked up in that time and I became convinced over George's kind of early in 22 and then moving forward that like the history of guys aging in center field was not very good, mm-hmm. especially guys who are 6'2", 6'3", 200 plus pounds. So the theory was that Springer wasn't going to stay in center. They needed to find a full-time center fielder. And here are some guys. I did not think it was going to hit as bang on. I've had a lot of threads that lead to nowhere. This one led to somewhere and it might've been like, this is a lesson in careful what you wish for sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you became synonymous. You became synonymous. And then you sort of like, I think in that situation, anybody would understand, you sort of end up, I don't want to say rooting, you're always rooting for the team to succeed, but yeah. you sort of become labeled as the Dalton Varsho guy.
Correct. It was, not only do you get labeled as the Varsho guy, but also the good friends who like to poke and prod at times, and also just the people in your life and the people around you who like to antagonize you a little bit, definitely would get texts and tweets and whatever anytime Moreno or Gurriel did anything remotely productive. And I'm like, okay, if you send me another tweet or a message about a Moreno hit or throwing somebody out, I will block you. So
yeah, no kidding. I can only imagine. Luckily, everyone knows that I'm not to be taken seriously. So I've got that covered. Let's go through the profile a little bit. Bats left, throws right, as you mentioned, a center fielder, but playing left field a lot of last year. When he did get there, got a lot of value. We'll talk about it in a second. 27 years old right now, turns 28 in July. He's an ARB1 guy. 5-6-5 this year, two options. Can't imagine a world where either of those get used and we're not in real trouble. And as you mentioned so nicely there, how he got here, you might have heard of it. Varsho for Gabby Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., a little Christmas present, December 23rd, 2022. I was making a holiday meal at the time and then was like, I'm going to have to really be careful of the amount of attention that I pay to what I'm doing right now. Because luckily, though, we were prepped. I was ready to go in my Dalton Varsho talking points, thanks to you. I have spent, as you, I'm sure, to 10 times this, I spent a lot of the fall being like, I actually really like Gabriel Moreno. And the worst thing that could possibly happen is this Diamondbacks miracle run for a million reasons. It's like, if he had just been a quietly good Arizona Diamondback, no one would care. But they just so happened to make this miracle run. Can you take me through sort of how you felt when the trade happened? And obviously you talked about the personal fallout, but just this trade in general.
Yeah, when the December 23rd, you mentioned, my phone started blowing up.
I'm sure.
Just people texting at like, just people saying, Merry Christmas, like, here's your Christmas game two days early. And I'm like, I mean, it's fun to a certain degree, but also like a bunch of people being like, oh, you're going to, one specific text I remember, I won't name the person, but they said, you were insufferable before this trade happened. Now it's just going to be on a whole other degree. And I'm like, yeah, probably. I always thought that Moreno was going to be the catcher that was dealt. Mm-hmm. And that didn't mean that I liked Kirk or Jansen more. That didn't mean I thought they'd be better. It's that I thought he had the most value. And that was the only way they could get an impact player. They weren't, it's not that Kirk wasn't a really good player and there wasn't value, but he had limitations. And I think there were more, Moreno was a prototypical number one prospect or top prospect. So I always thought it was going to be him that moved. People quibble about the Gurriel being added, you know, Gurriel having a quasi bounce back last year. Like, people forget that he really wasn't good the year before. There were injury reasons for that. There are also reasons to believe why he'd be better in a walk year and all that stuff. But I wasn't like terribly, you know, I didn't think it was a huge overpay. I think it might have been a little bit of an overpay because they were filling to fit a need. But also, I'm of the opinion that this trade doesn't become nearly as much of a story. You were bang on in terms of the D-backs making the playoffs, but also, like, if Kirk has a good year, this isn't as much of a story. Like, I think he's as much of a part of this trade as anyone, because it was a as much a vote of confidence for Kirk than as it was anything else. So that would go a long way towards like the volume being turned down a little bit on the Varsho evaluation and the evaluation of this trade. And also, like, just, you know, a guy who so much of his value, even if you hit 27 home runs like you did the year before, I don't know what number you want to pull, 70%, 60%, 75% of his value is defense and base running. So, like, no matter what, most of his value was going to be on those parts of the game. And if Vladdy was hitting, if Kirk was hitting, if Springer was more like Springer, again, the Varsho offensive discussion becomes less of a focal point. So, exactly.
Speaking of that discussion, last year, I mean, the 220, 285, 389, 20 home runs, 16 steals. It's an 85 OPS plus or WRC plus, whichever one of those you find cooler or easier to understand. You said it. A bunch of the value is in defense and outfielding, and 11 runs, 11 outs above average, 9 of them in center field, not even playing as the center fielder most of the time, 2 in left field. That's 97th percentile outfield defense. Somehow, some way, while still being basically thought of as the full-time left fielder, 95th percentile base running. You probably didn't notice unless you have a trained eye. It's all good. As bad as he was, that's a 2-win player on Fangraphs, a 4-win player on Baseball Reference. A lot of little things to pick at to how we got here. Fell off a cliff against righties. Was a 122 WRC plus against righties in 2022. Basically, as you sort of alluded to, who's a 5-win player per Fangraphs, but it was only a 107 WRC plus. So, like, he's a 5-win player with a slightly above average batting profile at the time. Was pretty good in June and August, just brutal in July. 11 bunt base hits, which was the story everyone likes to tell. He, like everybody, was pretty bad with runners in scoring position, and he hit best 5th and 9th in the order. A big picture there. An easy way to ask you, what, now that you've had some time, you've had some space, you can take a helicopter view, what do you think is at play here? Also adding in that a lot of Blue Jays were randomly very bad at home last year.
Yeah, quickly on the home road stuff, like, I am very...
It's stark.
I am in the group of thinking it's less of a factor than most people do. I don't think the dimensions have nearly as much of an impact as we think. One factor that I think has, like, is more of a factor than, like, kind of most people have even considered. I think I briefly mentioned this on social late in the year, this past season. If you look at, like, the split of, like, if you take away common games, so, you know, they're playing, for the most part, the Yankees the same home and road away and Rays, blah, 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 blah. But for example, like, if you look at the NL teams that came into the Dome versus the NL teams they played on the road, like, there's more of a 2023 was like the biggest kind of discrepancy between your home and road opponents that baseball's really ever had, probably because of the new schedule. It's still not huge, but it's a factor. Like, think about some of the pitchers that were in town that we saw at the Rogers Center, Spencer Strider, Logan Webb, Zach Gallen and the D-backs, all those Padres. Like, I think that Padres series, like the Padres dealt, like it was Blake Snell and Darvish and Musgrove. Like, and then you think about the NL teams they faced on the road, Pittsburgh, Cincy, Colorado, like St. Louis, who wasn't very good this year. So I don't think that explains everything, but I think it explains more than just thinking assuming the dimensions had something to do with it, because I actually think it's something that's tangible and you can look at and quantify. So I think I would love, I've been telling my and poking and prodding my friends at MLB Statcast and stuff, and they keep telling me to just, they don't actually keep telling me to bugger off, but I think that's what they like. I want to see a quality of competition metric somehow of like,
sure,
I think that would explain a lot of like last 14 days or last month or home road. It's like, if you're wondering why someone's struggling or doing well, I think the quality of pitching they've faced can go a long way towards explaining that, or the quality of hitters. So that'll be, who knows, 3 years.
What about I have two. What about the scoreboard was too bright?
Yeah.
With that? Because the Jays pitchers are also a lot better there without missing, not like missing more bats and striking more people out there. It's just like
bright scoreboard. Okay.
Less, and the music in the new club in right field.
Okay.
Distracting.
It was just, everything was distracting.
How could you focus? How could you
focus? Too much of a good time happening.
What if there was a party happening in the room beside me and you were trying to do this with me the whole time? Eventually you would hear a song and trail off.
Yeah. My prediction is I think the home road numbers are going to be far more equal this year, and people will come up with narratives about it, and I won't believe any of them. I like to play poker, and there's poker players who will always want to change seats or like have seats that they like, have seats that they don't. And they'll come up with perfectly valid reasons why they like one seat more than the other. And it's all BS. And I think we like to come up with reasons for things. And I just don't think that the home road thing is real.
Okay. Back on the road about Dolly Parton.
Sorry.
We could both do this all day, I think, with those little minis. What's the Dalton Varsho, I don't say rationale. How did you see the season as a whole for him? And
saw a guy who was tinkering. I saw a guy who was I hate to get into qualitative stuff. It seemed a guy who seemed to be pressing, a guy who seemed to want to live up to trades. Again, I just said people come up with reasons to explain things that you can't necessarily quantify, but in some case, like I saw a guy who was pressing. I saw a guy who was tinkering.
I would just say that, like, I'm of the opinion, like, I agree with you there, but I'm sort of the opinion, like, unquantifiable doesn't mean not real, right?
Yep.
Sort of like, that's how I always view those sort of things. Cause you'll hear people in years later, you'll hear athletes talk about things they were dealing with or how they felt. And it's like, it's a huge part. It's a huge part of it. So go on.
The one interesting thing that stands out to me is I think the most common hole or problem with him that was talked about is the high pitch, top of the zone. And this isn't me saying that wasn't an issue. It was. He wasn't good up there. But I think a bigger problem, I don't think the numbers say a bigger problem, were inside fastballs. Mm-hmm. The inside corner was a far bigger problem for him than the top edge of the strike zone and up and around there. If you look at his numbers on the inside corner, or even just inner third and further in, he was by far and away the worst left-handed hitter on inside fastballs. I looked it up. Hold on, let me pull it up. So if you just, I like run value. Just, I'll do a quick.
Yeah,
it's a good way of explaining how you performed on every single pitch. Did you lay off balls? Did you swing at strikes? Did you foul up? Anyways, Kyle Tucker led all lefties with a plus 20 on inside fastballs. Damn. Freddie Freeman, plus 19. Arise, plus 18. These names make sense. They passed the smell test. There was only one lefty that was lower than a minus 10. It was Dalton Varsho, and he was minus 18.
Oh my goodness.
So there were 200. And so it's a huge gap. And the weirdest The other thing that like stands out to me about this is it wasn't an issue in prior years. He was middle of the pack. It wasn't a hole in his swing in prior years. It was a huge hole in his swing this year. I find that encouraging because I feel like they can maybe identify something that was different, fix it. I already noticed this spring, he's kind of opened up his stance a little bit. And if you go back and look at some clips, it's something that he did back in his rookie year as well. So maybe that has something to do with handling inside pitches. But to me, the biggest thing that stands out, it's not the top of the zone. It's the inside corner, hard and in. If he can find a way to fix that and make it not such a glaring issue, then I think like he can easily find a way to get to league average hitter. And that's, again, as we talked about before, league average hitter, when you are one of the 10 best fielders and runners in the game, is just fine.
Yeah, it ends up being very valuable, as a matter of fact, to have a good hitter who's also incredible at every other part of the game. The parts that we don't necessarily, as you talked about so perfectly, quantifiable, we're just scratching the surface on quantifying those. And it's interesting to look at projection systems. I obviously am not smart. People know that. But they're calculated, and I think the best thing you could do is ignore them. The second best thing you can do is amalgamate them to get an idea of what people think. Necessarily isn't necessarily what I think, but what people think. You have a range of basically from 230 to 240 with an OBP of between 300 and 310. They all like him to hit between 23 and 25 home runs. The walk rates and the K rate sticking around 22 or 23 to 24 and in the 8 zone. Zips likes him the most in terms of hitting with a 107 WRC plus, which is back to who he was the year before he came here. Steamer, similarly confident, a 105 and just 99 from the bat. So it's weird. The Zips numbers, you're sort of seeing, it's like back to a 107. The 2.3 is what they're giving him for a projected war. I think that is obviously your left-handed discount. You're sort of getting taxed, or pardon me, the left field discount there, not the left-handed. If he were in center, as we saw with the Diamondbacks, I think that number jumps considerably. Steamer, very similarly, 2.7 war. That ends up being getting down to splitting what position the projections have been playing, right? Hitting 107 in center field as an elite center fielder versus hitting 107 in left field as an elite left fielder. There's like a 2-win difference, as we can see. That hit your ears right. I know it's a lot of numbers at once, but does the 107 WRC plus feel like a reasonable target for a year for you?
Yeah, and I'd be, as we just said, like I'd be happy with that. I think the 85 or whatever it was just weird, for all the reasons we talked about. You know, he's getting to a point, I don't know what he's at in terms of career plate appearances, like 1,500, 1,600, somewhere around there. He's getting to a point where this is likely, you know, what he's going to be. I think a couple of things stand out. I think you can be fine with a 310, 315 on base, whatever. I think we just want him as Blue Jays fans and, you know, as the Blue Jays front office. I think they just want him to be closer to 30 home runs than 20. I don't think they necessarily are looking to him to transform into a 350 on base guy. I don't think that's coming anytime soon, but just run into a few more. And one thing that's interesting, I think Statcast, MLB, those guys are going to have public bat speed stuff this year. Mm-hmm. And there was some stuff that started dripping, kind of slowly coming out last year. And like Varsho's bat speed is right among the best Blue Jays. And you can argue there's some interesting discussions around, like, do you want to be maxing your bat speed all the time? Right. And you could even argue that maybe he could benefit from not being swinging so hard all the time. But anyways, the only reason I say it is he's got the bat speed that he is going to. 20 home runs is like the floor for him, I think, when you have that kind of bat speed. He's a strong guy. He's young. He's 25, 26. Like, I think 20 is the floor. So, and I think like the upper range is 30, 32, something like that. So if he's closer to 30, again, he can be a valuable player.
Discourse around, we talked quite a bit about it off the top. I mean, an easy whipping boy scapegoat last year. I think the the fall off, not fall off the cliff, but the really bad months, really weren't able to be based to be able to appreciate the good things he does. Right.
Exactly.
It all says there is like, you only need him to be so good to be very valuable. And I think if he sort of ended up shortchanging himself because a decent offensive performance, I think people would have really fallen in love with him pretty quick.
100%. You can only go to the well so many times telling people on a broadcast or on a Twitter thread or whatever. You can only go to the well so many times saying, look at how good of a defender and base runner this guy is. At a certain point, the offense needs to get to a certain level. And the other part that's like, not frustrating, but like the other part that feels like a missed opportunity is like, this is the prototypical Toronto sports fan favorite. Scrappy, a little short guy, runs hard, diving everywhere. Like, how is he not Kevin Pillar fan favorite type?
I know, bunt hits. What do we love? Bunt hits.
Like, he is Kevin Pillar. Like, it's Kevin Pillar, but with a little more power. But again, like, the trade informed everyone's opinion of him. And he, like, that's unfair, but also explainable and reasonable. Like, I don't think it's fair that he's judged based off of what two other guys are doing, but I understand it from a fan's perspective. So it's not like I'm telling people to feel differently about him, but I just, it's too bad that this is how he was acquired, because like I said, like, I think he's Darcy Tucker and Kevin Pillar rolled into one.
you've arrived perfectly at force of comp, which is you can take this however you want. You can take it force of comp in terms of how people think about him, force of comp in terms of pure play style. I've had people analyze pitch shape in this section. They've talked about appearance and vibe. I personally lean towards like just sort of what does his experience remind me of? And to me, he's Midwest Colby Rasmus. Where it's like there's this group of people that are like, I know it seems like he's miserable, but he's amazing if you are focusing on him. And then he has the 1 year and you're like, see, this is who I think he always is. And everyone else is like, he strikes out an awful lot. And I'm like, you just don't get it. You just don't get it. So he's always been Midwest Colby Rasmus to me. What's your, however you want to take it, what's your force of comp on?
I've got a couple interesting. I mean, I've mentioned Pillar, like Pillar with more power is one. Two guys that jumped out when I actually just kind of tried to look at the numbers through, I can't remember if it was up in terms of year, how many seasons in the bigs or whether it was up to an age season. I think it was up to age 26 seasons and kind of like low on base, but good value in the outfield who jumped out, and two guys jumped out, Byron Buxton and Mike Cameron. And wow, the Mike Cameron one, I really think is a good fit, obviously lefty righty difference, but, in terms of the elite defense, fast runner, low on base, runs into some baseballs, hits 20, 25, 17, whatever home runs. If you do a little amplification for modern baseball, then you kind of get to Varsho. And I kind of like the Mike Cameron one. Yeah. And like the good, if you want to look at it from a positive spin, Mike Cameron played a long time in the bigs, and he was a valuable player for a long time. He had 200-plus home runs after his age 26 season. He had 10 seasons where he was worth 3 wins or more via Baseball Reference, wins above replacement. So I think you got to like that comp. Guys who can catch the baseball are going to be valuable for a long time. And here's one other Blue Jays comp for you. That I actually, in terms of batted ball profile, left-handed Danny Jansen.
Nice
fly balls, pull rate, and everyone loves the way Danny Jansen hits. Like, he goes through cold stretch, and again, like if Varsho can just be a little bit more like that, get into like a hot streak that carries you for a week, again, run into some baseballs, we'll all be happy. Keep doing it, and I think he's gonna end up being like, I think there's gonna be a long term, you know, for the tough first year, I think it's going to go better just because I think like he can always fall back. Like, as you said earlier, if this is the very worst he's going to be offensively, he's still a 2-win player. And like always having that as your baseline, it doesn't take much to be worth 4 or 5 wins. And I think he's perfectly capable of it.
So what do you, if you had to make a prediction, you've rationalized last year, you've looked at what the projections are next year. What do you envision? What are you feeling for 2024 for him? Bounce back, it seems like.
28 home runs.
Very nice.
Okay. I don't think the on base is going to be different. Yeah. Let's say it's about, was it under 300 this year? I think it was.
It was pretty dreadful. Yeah. It was 285.
Okay. That was lower than I thought. Let's go 305, 310 on base.
Yeah.
With 27 or 28 home runs and all the other stuff being the same. I do think it'll even be better in the following years. Like, I understood why they brought back Kiermaier. Like, it made sense. They've turned their focus to defense, to run prevention would be the term
correct
that everyone would use. So I understood bringing him back, but like, as you mentioned a couple of times, like the pathway to him putting up numbers that are more valuable in terms of war and all that stuff will be when he's playing 120 games in the center or 130. But I think 27, 28 home runs, I'll be happy. And I think that's my fearless prediction.
I love it. I love it. And it seems like bigger picture, you're rosy on him as well. You're thinking.
I'm rosy too, for the most part. I get grumpy about when work stuff doesn't go well, but in terms of hoping the best for the teams I like to watch. I'm optimistic. There are maybe some other people not so optimistic right now, but I'm not talking about them today. I'm only talking about Dalton Varsho.
Absolutely. And I thank you so much for your time talking about Dalton Varsho. It's Chris Black. You know him down to Black on Twitter. You know him from being the unseen hand behind all that you see and take in about the Toronto Blue Jays. You may not know, but if you do know, now you know. Chris, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate your insights, man.
I enjoyed this a lot, man. Thanks a lot.